Kirk, thanks so much for the time. I'm going to guess that this date never passes without 1983 crossing your mind.
No, it doesn't. And, it was, you know, so unexpected. I mean, you say, well, how was it unexpected? He was in the hospital. He'd had a heart problem. Because we had just been, you know, convinced that he was, you know, that it hadn't been a great crisis. He was taken care of. They were going to do a little bit more. And, you know, I fully expected him to be out and about pretty quick. In fact, Al Browning worked for me at the time and or with me. Al had been also very, very close to Coach Bryant. And Coach Bryant had told him that he wanted to get out of the way up there at the athletics department, and for us to find him an office. And we had one pretty close to our offices in downtown Tuscaloosa, but he wanted something out closer to his home and more to the point, I think, close to Indian Hills, where he played golf and other things. And so we were, you know, we were really expecting Coach to be around a long time, and I certainly was looking forward to being able to maybe have time with him on yet another level. I'd worked for him, I'd covered him, and I'd you know, really kind of looked forward to his golden years, as I'm sure he and his family and everybody else expected. So it was quite a shock when, and Al was one of the very first people to know. He was just kind of checking in with Linda, Coach Bryant's secretary, and just, you know, just a routine call, and she said, Allie's gone. Of course, he was as shocked as could be, and he came in, and fittingly enough, I guess, I was on the phone on a recruiting call doing some recruiting work, and Al said, I've got to talk to you, so I, you know, got off the phone and then got that terrible news.
I'm going to guess that was one of the phone call Al happened to make at that moment was probably one of the last phone calls made that day in Tuscaloosa that did not get a busy signal or something along those lines. But for those that don't know the story or unaware, that it was from a communication standpoint, long before the internet, telephone, your primary way of getting through, and virtually everything was shut down very, very quickly as word started to spread.
Well, it was. You know, I was a little surprised that my phone wasn't ringing off the hook. And there was a good reason. You know, as you say, it was just you couldn't get phone calls into or out of Alabama. Obviously, some people were because it was all jammed up, but right. Not near enough lines or whatever. I don't know how that technology works, but they couldn't handle it all. I know that.
Let me ask you, and we've never, I don't think, ever had this discussion. We've talked on this date before in different radio shows I've done, and including this one and other anniversaries related to Coach Bryant. But how different, if any, do you think Ray Perkins' tenure might have been at the University of Alabama if he had been able to work under Paul Bryant as athletic director?
It would have been much, much different. For one thing, as much as we hate to admit it, the recruiting had fallen off the last few years that Coach Bryant was here. Even though he won national championships in 78 and 79, which you'd think would carry for a while. I'm not going to say the staff had gotten complacent. I think that it had just become more difficult because the end was obviously near for his, not for his life, but for his coaching career.
Right.
And you know, what could you say? You know, you can say, well, yeah, Coach Bryant won't be there to coach you, but he's not going to be somewhere else, so you still need to come to Alabama. That was about, you know, that was the recruiting pitch.
Right.
And it just wasn't quite good enough. Nobody knew what was going to happen. So if Coach Bryant could have stayed, that damage was already done, the recruiting damage. But if he could have stayed on, he would have been the one taking the blame for anything that went wrong. That was his nature anyway, to take the blame and to give credit to others. So he would have deflected so much that Ray took on. And also, I think it would have been Coach Bryant's stature, of course, was as high as it could be. But if he was alive, if he was a human being, you know, right there, flesh and blood, it's a little easier to humanize him than what he became after his death. I mean, which was really totally beyond what Ray could have possibly expected. Nothing that Ray did could be right. Now, he did some things that were just absolutely wrong. We all do, and he certainly did. But I think it would have been a lot, lot better with that. Plus, and I take some blame for this, I thought that Ray should pursue the job of director of athletics after Coach Bryant died. And he was on the committee to choose an athletics director, which automatically precluded him from getting that job. And I said, I think you ought to try and get it. He said, well, I just want to control what I can control. I said, well, that's the way you control everything, if you're athletics director. I was so wrong. Coach Bryant had done both, but that was for a different reason and in a different time. So Ray took on this additional task of being director of athletics, for which he was not at all qualified to be. And so if he'd had Coach Bryant as athletics director, he wouldn't have had that on him. He'd have just been recruiting, which he was excellent at, and coaching football. I think he had a good staff and did a good job. I just think everything would have been a lot better for Ray Perkins.
Kurt McNair, Bama Magazine, BamaMag.com, kind enough to join us here on our Bud Light Hotline presented by Green Beverage. The day coming that anybody could be mentioned anywhere close to the same breath as Coach Bryant is something none of us thought we'd see. Nick Saban, though, has at least gotten it to the point where there is conversation. That's why I think the decision by Lane Kiffin to stay to do what he's doing after the announcement this weekend that he's going to stick around is going to prove to make his legacy, whatever that is, 30 years from now, much better. I'm going to guess you'd agree with that statement. It's been a pretty good thing for Lane Kiffin that Tuscaloosa will continue to be his place of employment for a year.
Right. I think it's more, you know, if last week when I was asked the question by a friend, I said, well, I think it's like 70-30 or 60-40. Alabama needs Lane Kiffin, I think, because of the circumstances of quarterback and having just implemented, I'm not going to say his system, but his tweaks on the system in the past year with such great success. On the other hand, I think Lane Kiffin needed to stay at least another year at Alabama, not only to be under Nick Saban, and as Kiffin pointed out on several occasions, on a few occasions we could talk to him, he has learned a lot working for Nick Saban. And so I think that was important for him. And also, you know, they talk about job hopping. Well, you know, if you're getting a new job and it's a better job, then, you know, I don't think it really matters how often you do it. As we all recall, when Nick Saban came here, everybody said, well, he wouldn't last more than 4 or 5 years because he never did. But as we prepare for the next year, we know that he's going to stay here as long as he feels like it and feels like he's doing a good job, I think. But Lane Kiffin being back, the quarterbacks, all but one, have gotten exposed to his system. There'll be a great quarterback battle in the spring, and I feel sure right up until the week of the first game next year. I could be wrong on that, but past history tells us that when there's a new quarterback, so far that's the way it's worked right up until the last minute. So we'll see who Lane Kiffin develops, but I think that's a huge thing for Alabama. The job he did with Blake Sims, who would have ever dreamed this time a year ago that we'd have a new record holder in passing at Alabama. So good for everyone, I think, and can't wait to see it unfold.
Kirk, let's turn it to basketball in the final few minutes that I've got with you, and let's start just with Saturday's game to itself. Alabama and Auburn, and awfully entertaining down the stretch. It was not the prettiest game that's ever been played in that building.
No, but it's better to win than lose.
It really is. But just kind of your take on the game itself and the fact that Alabama was able to win a game in a fashion that they had lost just 2 days earlier.
Yeah, I thought when the game started, I remarked to a friend of Kerry Clark, who works with me, I said, so they're not going to call over the back today? Because they were just right off the bat, there were several that weren't called. So I think one thing that we can take from that game is that no matter how bad the play or how bad you think the coaching was, the worst aspect of it was the recruiting, and I mean the officiating. And I don't mean just the calls, which, you know, right or wrong on those, you're going to get about the same of that. And I don't think the officiating influenced the outcome insofar as the winner. But I thought that the officials lost control of the game, and that added very much to the thugginess of it on both sides and the just generally poor play, the reviews that they had to keep making. Just so much of it, I thought they lost control and was the worst part of it. The best part of it by far was the return of Levi Randolph. The Levi Randolph we saw early in the year, who put that team on his back and carried it. And, of course, he's a fine player, but he's more than that. He's sort of the heartbeat of this team. And he had been in a little bit of, in my opinion, he'd been in hibernation a little bit. He kind of just watching the game, just another player. And he's got to be more than that. He's got to be the guy. And about 8 minutes to go in Alabama in dire straits, he became the man. And fabulous, fabulous performance by him down the stretch. I thought two key plays. One, when he stole the ball right after Terrence, second technical, Auburn had scored free throws, or maybe one, I can't remember, and then had the ball, which, you know, that was a huge, huge technical foul at the time. And Randolph stole the ball and went the length of the court for a slam. And I thought that kind of that really energized the crowd. And then when he had missed two free throws, and then Justin Coleman got fouled and had a 1-and-1, made the first, missed the second, and Levi somehow got the rebound in the middle of the lane, put it back in, and was fouled and made that free throw for a 4-point trip that gave Alabama the lead. And not to take anything away from Rodney Cooper, who made the winning goal, I thought Levi was the story of the game.
And finally, as I'll let you go, both Wimp Sanderson and Sonny Smith were in the building. And while the level of talent and for a good bit of the game, the level of play certainly wouldn't match what those two guys had going in their heyday, I thought we felt some intensity in there that we hadn't felt in a long time. And obviously that has a lot to do with Bruce Pearl. But do you feel like we're closer, at least in terms of Alabama, Auburn, and people caring and having that kind of blood boiling, I guess, for lack of a better description? Are we closer to getting that again?
Well, I think we will be when the level of play goes up. And I think it's going to, and unfortunately I think I'm very confident that Bruce Pearl is going to have better Auburn teams than the one he just brought in here. And it looks like, based on last year's, the last couple of years recruiting, that Alabama's about to start moving up again too, which, I think that, when you get to both playing well, I think that will be a tremendous rivalry and one to look forward to. And I certainly agree that there was a lot of intensity in there. You could feel that crowd was not electric, not so much that, but intense and also tense. I think there was a level of we cannot lose this game, and if we do, there need to be repercussions.